Hello, dear friend. Thank you for hanging out with A Couple of Multiples today. We are your hosts, Drew
and Garden System. We are a married couple that both have dissociative identity disorder, or DID.
Our lives are both ordinary and uniquely complex. Perhaps you are introduced to DID in a movie or TV show, or maybe you have been diagnosed with a disorder, or you are a therapist that wants to learn more about working with a client that has it.
Whatever the case may be, we are glad you are here to learn all about how media portrayals have contributed to the stigma of DID and how members of the DID community are changing the narrative. Dylan Crumpler's mother, Holly Crumpler, lives with dissociative identity disorder, and he produced a short film called Petals of a Rose in order to show an accurate portrayal of life with DID in contrast to your typical Hollywood movie. You are making a difference by choosing to listen to this podcast today because sensationalized media portrayals are extremely harmful to those who actually live with DID and hinder diagnosis and treatment.
You can help dispel myths about DID and help spread awareness by sharing this podcast with a friend or loved one. Please visit acoupleofmultiples.com. Together, we can make a difference by taking the disorder out of dissociative identities. Hello there, and thank you for tuning into the stellar guest episode with Drew
and Garden System,
A Couple of Multiples.
As you learned from our previous episodes, we are a married couple that were both diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder, or DID.
Today, we have two special guests for you. Holly and Dylan Crumpler are a mother-son team of passionate activists working to reduce the stigma associated with dissociative identity disorder, or DID. Given that DID has historically been depicted in an inaccurate, sensationalized, and violent way in film and television, Dylan created his senior thesis film, Petals of a Rose, at Chapman University to realistically depict a day in the life of a woman with DID. He co-wrote the screenplay with his mother, Holly, who was diagnosed with DID in 2018 at the age of 51.
Petals of a Rose has received international acclaim, with Dylan and Holly sharing the film at numerous mental health conferences and educational events. The film is being used by clinicians in training sessions, college courses, and therapeutic settings. Welcome, Dylan and Holly. We are so happy to have you on A Couple of Multiples, the reality of dissociative identity disorder.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we're so happy to be here. We love what you guys are doing with this podcast, so we're honored to be a guest.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that. We're so glad you're here.
Yes. Well, as you can imagine, we have so many questions we can't wait to ask both of you. Okay. Holly, would you be willing to share a little bit about how you figured out that you have DID and how your husband and kids found out? And then Dylan, what was it like for you during the process of figuring all the things out?
Okay. Let's see if we can do this one quickly. In my former life, before I embarked on all this mental health advocate work with Dylan, I used to be a tax partner at Deloitte, which is an international public accounting firm. And I was a tax partner there, and I worked there for 25 years. And it was a really intense career. And after those 25 years, I had actually had a lot of physical health challenges my whole life, starting really in college. And I was always able to just push through. Like, I lived in this push crash cycle like forever until finally my body said, no, we're done, and completely shut down. And that was like in 2012. So I ended up having to take a disability retirement from Deloitte and stop working completely in 2015. I stopped working completely in 2014, but officially retired in 2015. And I was very, very sick. I had chronic Lyme disease. I had all these issues with mold toxicity. It took a long time to kind of sort out what was even going on, but I started to get treatment and started to get a little more stability with my physical health, although I still am on long-term disability and still have to manage my health carefully. But when things started to settle out a little bit, I actually went through this big period that was very, very challenging with so many things happening with the mold in our house. And my mother was actually dying of ovarian cancer, and kind of like all these things were happening all at once. But after my mom passed in the end of 2016, things were getting a little more stable with my health. The end of 2017, I actually had another thing. My sister had ended up having stage 4 melanoma. She had a brain tumor, and I went out to help her. It was just kind of like one thing after another. And I took this writing class at the end of 2017. It was an expressive writing class called Write to Heal, Transform Your Health. And I was like, yes, I need to transform my health, and I have a lot of healing to be done. And when I first got sick, like back in 2013, I started doing therapy around who am I if I'm not working at Deloitte and, you know, dealing with this chronic health issue, thinking I'm going to die. It was really a very dire situation. And when I was starting into that therapy, I started talking about my history of childhood abuse, because my first therapist in 2013, so one of my first therapists when I was sick, she said, because I said, you know, I think I just worked myself to death. I drove myself into the ground, and, you know, that's why I'm so sick. And she said, you know, I don't think it's just about you working yourself to death. I want to talk about your childhood trauma, because I had filled out the intake forms and said, you know, I had this history of childhood sexual abuse. So we started doing some work with that. But then it all kind of got put on hold when all that other stuff I just described was happening. But then when I started taking this writing course, things started kind of opening up, because I started writing about my childhood trauma and my sexual abuse. And I had never told my mother about my abuse. And I was abused by my grandfather, and I'd never told her. It was something I didn't think she could really handle knowing. And so once she was gone, I think my part started to feel like, oh, we can start talking about this now. We don't have to keep this a secret anymore. And so things just started exploding for us. And we went through this period that we call the Great Unraveling, which was, oh, it was a scary, crazy time at the end of 2017 and the beginning of 2018, where I was having all these visions and flashbacks. And I really, really thought I was possessed by demons. I really did not know what was happening to me. It was very, very scary. And we ended up going to the neurologist, because I thought, oh, it's the mold. My brain is just all damaged. And then we went to the gynecologist because, oh, my hormones are out of whack. And we started going to different psychiatrists, and luckily made our way to one by January 2018, actually, to a psychiatrist who actually is the one who figured out what was going on with us. And so that psychiatrist is also my therapist, and still is 6 years later. And she ended up diagnosing me with DID in March of 2018.
Wow. That is quite a story.
Yeah. At age 51. Mm-hmm. So that's when I got my diagnosis, which is age 51, and I'm 57 now.
Yeah, it takes such a long time to figure out what's going on. And sometimes you don't know until like the crisis happens and things unravel, you know, and that's, I think I really resonate with that story of everything is fine. I just push through, push yes. through, push through, push through, push through. And then when things fall apart, then it's yeah. a mess.
Everything yeah. was never fine, you know, and I was in therapy. Like I started to go to therapy in college. You know, and started having issues where I'm talking about things in college. And then, you know, maybe 5 years into work, I started going to therapy because I was miserable. And I was just looking back at all of my notes, because Dylan and I are working on this training that we're doing on April 12th, where we've teamed up with these three therapists. And we're doing an all-day training where they're teaching about dissociation and, you know, diagnosing and treating. And I'm telling my healing journey. And Dylan is sharing, we'll talk about in a little bit, a documentary that he's making about misrepresentation of DID in film and television. So we're doing this all-day training. So as part of that, and like looking at my story and telling my story, I've been looking back at like, well, what is my diagnosis story? And I'm like, you know, I've been in the mental health system since college. And so I started looking back at the different notes. And, you know, like I found these notes from 1995, where after my session, I write down, I am fragmented into two pieces. There's the one who's driving me and the one who's driven. And these tapes keep playing that say, go, go, go. And at the bottom, I write, I will not be whole until I heal and bring these parts together. I'm like, what? You're like, that's 1995.
You totally said
1995, you know? And no one had any idea what was happening. But it was pretty clear when you look back at these pretty explicit notes about the parts. Yeah.
It's so interesting, right? Like when you look back and see the signs.
Yeah, I remember in my journals, I wrote very vividly like about parts. And I'm like, I knew but didn't know.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. Dylan, you want to talk about what it was like for you?
I mean, there are plenty of clues growing up. I would say to my therapist when I was a teenager, it's like she switches on me, those exact words. And mm-hmm. then So when she eventually did share with me that summer of 2018, the diagnosis, I just was like, well, that makes sense. And I was glad that we finally knew what was going on with her.
Yeah, well, they just thought I was kind of moody.
Yeah, we just thought it was mood swings, basically.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like,
it does look like that.
Well, it does.
Yeah.
And at one point, you know, I referenced a gynecologist, but I had like been working with a gynecologist for years before that, where they had diagnosed me with premenstrual dysphoric disorder. But it didn't completely align with my menstrual cycle. So it's just like, huh, maybe it wasn't quite that, right? But it did just seem like I had these crazy mood swings a lot of the time. So, yeah, it took a while to sort things out. And we did tell Dylan, he was in school when I first got diagnosed, but when he came home from that summers, and we told him, and then our younger son, and my husband was on this journey with me all along. So he, you know, he was involved in all of it. When he was taking me to therapy because I couldn't drive because I was just, you know, mm-hmm. I was suicidal and I was having just so many challenges. I was very non-functional in that great unraveling period. So he knew all along, but then our younger son, I think we waited another year or so to tell him. He was a little bit younger, and we didn't tell him until actually I think I was going to go inpatient, and it was like, you know, here's what's going on, when I had to go into the hospital. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it can be rough, but it's interesting, you know, your reaction, Dylan, because that's what my oldest daughter was like too.
I was just
like,
gonna say,
yeah,
makes total sense. This makes sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, we have a name for it now.
Right.
What you do.
And I think, you know, my husband Grady was really relieved because it was like, okay, yeah, now we have a name for it, and we can figure out how to make all this stuff that's happening that's causing so much distress stop by working on the actual issues of working with the different parts and figuring out what their individual traumas are and what are they getting triggered by and what do we need to work to heal from.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So true. So
in that
true.
Way, it's almost a relief to know.
It was.
So you could have a game
it
plan.
Was for sure.
So walk us through how your movie Petals of a Rose came to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So I needed a senior thesis film for my final year at Chapman University. And I'm like, if I'm going to make a movie, I want it to be about something important. I want to make films that can educate, entertain, and empower. And I didn't want to just make, you know, some silly little movie. One of the other students made like a pirate thesis, which was pretty cool. I mean, like they got on like, they shot on an actual pirate ship.
That's
it
cool.
was pretty cool. But, you know, there's, I don't know, you know, how impactful that film is unless it's doing like a juxtaposition about like the social commentary of piracy and like, I don't know.
That's not what it was.
Yeah, it wasn't like a social commentary of piracy or scurvy or anything like that modern day. So I'm like, hey, my mom has this condition. It took her 51 years to be diagnosed. It's never been depicted accurately in cinema. So how about in my 15 minutes, I go about sharing what DID actually is, what it looks like, what causes it, and how people with DID, you know, work with the parts in their system. And I set out to do that, and I think
you succeeded.
We succeeded.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I think so too. So you already knew about inaccurate depictions before you started.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, the films like Split. I remember when that came out, I'm like, you know, I get it's a horror movie, but this seems a little off. I'm like, this is an actual mental health depiction and that we don't really know much about. Or don't really talk about in society. And same thing with movies like Psycho. I mean, it's Alfred Hitchcock classic. And then all of a sudden it's like the plot twist is he and his mother are the same person. But it's just like, hey, that's a cool twist. And same thing with Fight Club. It's like, okay, that's more of a metaphor for like a philosophy of Brad Pitt's character than anything. But it's like people still might take it literally and be like, hey, what's that condition? And it's like, we don't really talk about this mental health stuff. And I want my films to talk about that. Mental health is really important and we haven't really been talking about it as much. And it's really glorified and sensationalized in film. And it's really not helpful.
Yeah, it was so needed what you did, a realistic depiction.
Yeah, it really is. When I was at residency for grad school and DID came up and one of the students just shouted out, just watch Sybil. And I shouted out no almost immediately. And then I was like, oh, my 13-year-old part just popped out and said no in front of the whole cohort there. You know?
Yeah.
It
we were like, no, we're not watching The Symbol for DID, yeah, no. You know?
I think it's interesting that's the one that pops up most frequently. It's like, that's the one. Because even growing up, it's like, hey, is there any, what can I watch for to learn more about it? And it's like, Symbol. But then, you know, you read more about it, and it's like, well, wait, hold on. There's inaccuracies. Stuff was made up. There's a whole completely inappropriate relationship between her and the therapist. And it's like, well, shoot, maybe why is this the go-to one? Also, it's from 1976.
Right.
Like that, and like Three Faces of Eve is one of the more accurate ones. It's like a film from 1957 should not be, you know, what you point to for a depiction of mental health on screen.
Absolutely not.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you tell us about the process of educating the actors on DID for the movie? Because I'm assuming they did not have DID.
Correct. So same thing with the cast and crew. I wrote a, it's on my website, dylancrumpler.com, at the very bottom. It's a research paper, but it's really more of a film breakdown, a script breakdown of how DID is being depicted in the film. So, again, I was very intentional with this film about what I was trying to do as far as, depicting it. So the whole paper, which was like 6 pages long, double spaced, though, for anyone who's intimidated by that, breaks down the film and what exactly is happening, and it explains DID. So it was a requirement for everyone involved on the production to read the research paper. That way we could all be on the same page of what this condition is and what is happening in each scene in each given moment.
And want to talk about what you did with Langley?
Yes, the actress Langley Marr. We had a Zoom interview between her and Holly, where she could, you know, actually, you know, ask Holly, you know, all these different questions. And I have videos, of course, of Holly in her different parts when she's switching, because that's just what I do. I'm a filmmaker, so I capture it. And Holly and I went through the videos to figure out what, you know, like what I could share and what might be good examples for her to see a switch and to see, you know, the different parts being active. Yeah, most of it's just Susie, you know, a little, because I mean, it's pretty easy to spot a little, you know, when they're all fun and happy and all.
Right. Well, we love you, Susie.
Yes. Oh, she got it. Daisy loves Susie. She's like, yes, she wants to be a movie star. We want to be a movie star too.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, Langley was very good at asking questions because she wanted to be able to understand what happens in the body, you know, physically, what's going on when you switch, because, you know, we were telling her it's not like you see in the movies, but it's so much more subtle. And I mean, it can be really more dramatic once you get to know someone and they trust you and they feel safe with you, but otherwise it's not. And so, you know, we wanted to depict those more subtle shifts in the movie. And so I think Langley did a really good job of asking questions to understand that, so that she could embody it and not make it the way that's historically been sensationalized.
She did amazing.
Yeah. I'm glad that she asked about the internal experience of switching, because it's so true. Like, there's different feelings and sensations you have in your body when you switch.
Yeah, and like I shared with her, like, a lot of times my head will just jerk a little bit, or my leg. Oftentimes, like, if I'm just thinking about something and my leg will just jerk, I'm like, oh, someone's close by, that I got their attention. So I tried to share with her just some of the physical manifestations that happen as well.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah. So Holly, could you speak a little bit about the grocery store scene, right? So where the child part really wants that teddy bear, you know, I know that was really relatable to us, and I'm just sure that for a lot of people that they're also relate to it, that have lived experience.
Yeah. I heard you guys talking about it on your last podcast episode, right? It is like everyone's number one favorite scene, because almost every person who has dissociative identities experiences this, right? You go into a store and it's worse in the holidays. So this, you know, Petals of a Rose takes place at Valentine's Day. So there's even more candy and even more stuffed animals,
teddy bears.
And so we knew that this would be a very relatable scene for people, and which was also, you know, what we talked about. We're like, we have 15 minutes. We want to make it as relatable to as broad a spectrum of systems as we can, because as we know, every system is different in terms of how they present, who their parts are. But there are some kind of commonalities that I would say most systems, you know, have certain things. Like, most systems have littles who like stuffed animals. So we shared our experience with Dylan, because he would just ask me different questions about my experiences. And I told him a story about, one time I was at the Whole Foods and I'm walking along and all of a sudden Susie sees this 6-foot stuffed unicorn. Not a little unicorn, 6-foot stuffed unicorn. And all of a sudden, boom, Susie's out and she's just chattering away about the unicorn. And oh my gosh, and I love the unicorn. And I wonder how much the unicorn costs. I want to get it. I want to get it. And then this clerk just comes up and says, oh, the unicorn is $99. And I was like, I had no idea, you know, like because I was gone, you know, and Susie was just chatting away. And then Holly came back to reality when the clerk started talking to us. And I was like, oh, my God, I wonder how much of that she just witnessed, you know. And we did not get the unicorn for $99, unfortunately. But that's what that's all based on. And, yeah, it's just so relatable for so many systems.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Every time we go to the store, every time.
I know.
Cool. We have how many stuffed animals we have now. I know. This is ridiculous.
We should not count.
You know, and it's a constant negotiation process, right? I mean, we just had a negotiation with Susie the other night at our art class. We were doing the art class, and they had an assignment for you need to make the paper into 4 squares and do these things. Well, we had missed art class the week before, and they had made robots. So we're sitting there trying to follow the instructions to do the 4-square exercise, and we're doing it. And Susie's like, I want to make the robot. I want to make the robot. And we were just like, well, we need to follow the instructions, and we can't make 4 robots. That's just going to take too much time. And she got really mad about it. You know, and at the end of class, I was starting to clean up, and she was like, we want to make the robot. And so I'm like, you know what? We haven't really played much or done much because we've been working a lot on all these projects we're doing right now. So I'm like, we better let her make the robot. And oh my God, she made the best robot. It's so cool.
Of course she did.
And I'm so happy, like, you know, because that's where our root of our joy is in Susie. So when Susie's out, that's just like good for our whole system.
Would you be willing to share a picture of the robot that we could share so that our listeners could see the beautiful robot? I'm sure they want to see the robot.
Oh, yeah. Susie's getting really excited. She wants everyone to see the robot. She wanted us to post it on our social media earlier today, but I'm like, I already have another thing I'm already posting. So, oh, yeah, she definitely wants to share the robot.
Awesome. All right, great. We'll look forward to that.
Okay, what moment during filming or production impacted you the most?
That's for both of you.
I would say for me, it was the disclosure scene. That was incredibly impactful on the set. Like, I started crying while watching it.
You're saying when she shares with
Jeremy. When she shares with Jeremy her condition. And I had to go, I need to go like find like a Kleenex or something to go wipe my eyes off. And then all of a sudden, because they're shooting in the living room where she shares, and then there's like nothing but like a paper towel. So I tried ripping a paper towel, but there's like a dish and like the drying rack right next to the paper. And there's ba-dum,
you messed up
right
the
during the take. And it's like,
oh no.
Fortunately, she like right finished her line. I don't know if it made it into the final cut or not. I don't remember. But I'm just like, oh my God, how embarrassing. Because normally it's someone else on the set who makes noise in the background. And I'm like, guys, quiet on the set. But then it was me. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I'm like, I'm like, I'm not yelling cut. You guys keep going.
Right.
keep going. If you mess up, you know, just go back to where you were. So,
that's funny.
So yeah, but that was a very impactful scene. Because, yeah, I mean, you know, it's when the performance, when it's on set, and like, I'm crying from it. I'm like, yeah, this is.
Well, because, you know, to be accepted that way, we had a lot of conversation about that scene and about when we were writing it, about what should Jeremy do? How will he react? And we thought, oh, you know, if it was like the Hollywood story, it'd be like he'd probably just leave her and she'd be devastated.
Not just the Hollywood story. I thought it was going to be because, hey, this is a, you know, I was going to leave like a downer ending because it's like, hey, hard, you know, harsh reality. People, it sucks to have, you know, to be discriminated against and for people to not understand you. But then I'm like, well, hold on. My mom and dad are still together. Mm-hmm. Why would I show Jeremy leaving? Plus, I want to show positive role models. I want to show people how to respond appropriately to when somebody, you know, shares this information with you. Because, of course, it's very easy just to write conflict. And that's what they try to keep telling you in school. Right. Where's the conflict? And I'm like, will you guys stop trying to do conflict for the sake of conflict? Why are you trying to make my character get in fights all the time? Like,
there was already plenty of conflict. You didn't need him to leave her to have conflict.
Well, actually, one of my the professors asked me when I shared with them about the film. They're like, "Where's the conflict? And I'm like, are you kidding me?
The whole thing is internal.
It's internal conflict. There's three types of conflict: internal, yes, interrelational, and external. And I got all three.
Good job.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Absolutely,
so
you did.
So I think, yeah, we wanted to model the hope that, you know, people can live with DID and be in a loving relationship with someone. They can be accepted, they can be loved, yes, and they deserve that. And it, again, Dylan says, based on, you know, the fact that I've been in this relationship with my husband Grady for 38 years now. And that's the thing for me that was most impactful about the filming production. I was not involved in the filming or production. So we co-wrote the script. Dylan went out to California and made the film. I was not involved in any way. And I didn't see it until it was pretty much done. And when he first played it for me, he had the surprise for me that I had no idea that scene where Jeremy gets to the apartment and she opens the door and he's on his knees playing the guitar, the song he's playing is one of the songs that my husband Grady wrote for me back in like night.
That's so sweet.
Oh yeah, back like in the 90s. And she kisses me with her eyes. And so I just burst out crying, of course. You know, I'm like, oh my God, he's got my song in here. And so that was really, really special. And, you know, the whole film, I mean, when I watched it, I mean, then I got to the, I mean, I'm just bawling, you know, I'm just crying so much because when we wrote the script, you know, we wrote the script, but seeing it brought to life is a whole nother thing. And I just was blown away by what Dylan had been able to accomplish in depicting, yes, this condition so sensitively and so accurately and so respectfully. So it was just an amazing experience and a gift that Dylan gave to me.
Mm-hmm. We're major fans.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that emotional connection there, and I think having him respond, having Jeremy respond in the way that he did, yes, yeah, showing people this is how you, yes, respond. I just want to learn, yes, more, right?
Yes.
I just want to understand. Like, that's exactly what we should be doing with each other as human beings. I just want to understand,
yes,
you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Is it my turn? I think it's my turn. Okay. So, Holly, how has disclosure through this film affected all of yous in your system?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when we set out to make this film, it was just Dylan's senior thesis film. There was no plans to do anything with this film. You know, he was just...
I hoped it would, you know, launch. I hoped, you know, to make a feature out of it or something.
Yeah.
And that I could be like, hey, here's a proof of concept. But I did not think it would go global.
Right.
Like this.
Yeah. So it's really like... It's been like such an impactful thing for us, for our whole system in many ways. You know, I talked about how I was forced to retire from my career. And for a long time, all I was a sick person and a mom and a wife, but mainly a sick person, to be honest. And it's really, the film has given me new purpose and meaning in my life because we've gone on to take the film and do all the things that you mentioned in the introduction. We're doing training. We're training other clinicians. We're sharing it with people. And it's making a really big impact in the world for this condition. So that's been very gratifying. And it's allowed us to have, again, like a meaning and purpose for what we're doing besides being sick. And so that's been good, and it's a challenge because it puts us back into the world where we were before, where our superwoman part has the tendency to, she's a serious workaholic. So we've had to come back to dealing with our workaholism when we're, you know, doing this work that's so meaningful that we want to do more and more of it. So it's a challenge with balancing that with our physical health condition. And it's, you know, the process of the more we do the trainings and we talk about it, it also helps us understand our system better, you know, and we learn more through this process also. And I think it's also helped Dylan and I in our relationship because, you know, growing up with a mother with unhealed trauma and undiagnosed DID certainly had an impact on him. And I think it's part of what drove him to make the film was to better understand what the heck is going on with my mom.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely helped our relationship and our understanding of one another, or your understanding of me.
Yes.
Yeah.
That sounds really positive.
Yeah.
Really awesome. Okay, Dylan, I saw on your social media that you were watching all the movies that portrayed DID over the years. What have you learned by watching them, and which ones are the most accurate and which ones are the worst portrayals?
Oh boy. First thing I'll say is for this April 12th thing, we're screening a short a snippet of my upcoming documentary about DID representation in the media, specifically film and television, which for that I've watched at least close to 70 DID movies. I'm not going to watch the 6 Psycho sequels and remakes and spinoffs because it's just cash grabs the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
And I've already watched 64 others, and that's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So what have I learned? I've learned that historically, people just like to, it seems Hollywood executives just like to see what works, and then they will do the same thing over and over again without, you know, seeing if this actually has an impact on people. Mm-hmm. I hope that now with more of the, you know, social justice that's been going on, that we're going to get more accurate representation. But since there's not really anybody out there talking about DID, it's going to take a little more time and effort to do so, because mm-hmm. it's not like, you know, DID is very covert. It's not something people really talk about because of, you know, it's so misunderstood. It's mm-hmm. it's not like, oh, hey, you're that's a microaggression towards somebody of a different race, where you can very see, you know, you can see, you know, somebody's treating somebody differently because of the color of their skin or because they're different sexuality or gender. So I've just learned that none of the movies really get it right. And I don't know what I haven't really learned anything other than they've gotten it wrong so many times.
And it's so frustrating because, you know, we really have literally not seen a single film that is both accurate and respectful and nonviolent. And what happens is because there's been so little out there that is even close to being those three things, people who have dissociative identities, I think, have lowered the bar to where, like, if we see something in a film that feels that we can connect to it, it's like, oh gosh, they got this one thing, and I really liked how in The Crowded Room they depicted the inner world, and I could relate to that. But guess what? He's still an attempted murderer. Okay, so you know. Right. It's really frustrating that we have to pick these little pieces out of a portrayal where we're still being portrayed in these horrible ways. You know, a lot of people say they resonate with Moon Knight. He's still a killer, right? Can we just have an accurate and respectful portrayal where the person is not violent?
Yeah.
And of those, of the 70 films that you've watched, how many of them are not violent?
Is it 7?
7.
And the only one that's like even slightly accurate might be, there's only one. And that's Sybil, and that's not the DID movie I would ever tell anybody to watch.
Right. So I have a lot of, people, friends that have DID, and I don't know one that has killed somebody.
No. There's no correlation between DID and violence. It's just it's a lazy trope that, like Dylan said,
people like the plot twist. It really got big with Fight Club. Mm-hmm. Honestly, same thing with showing the visual hallucinations of, oh, guess what? That person over there who you thought was just, you know, doing stuff on their own, that was you. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's only one body. Right. Like, you can't be in one room over here and then he'd be over here. That's not how it works. And I would be interested to see what would happen if I pressed the play button on all these movies at once to see, like, if they all line up, it's like, hey, the 75 minute mark, now we're going to reveal the plot twist.
And probably do. But here's the thing also, people really have no idea how much harm these movies have done.
I'd say that's what I've learned the most.
That is
the harm.
And the way we've learned that is through the work that we're doing to work on this documentary. We launched a lived experience questionnaire.
Slightly misleading title because it includes therapists and supporters as well. There's a section for each of them.
Right, to get their lived experience of being in those roles. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to hear the voices of people about their experiences of living and treating dissociative conditions to inform both this documentary about the misrepresentation of a film, but also to inform the longer version of Petals of a Rose that we're working on. And it's been incredibly impactful reading. We've just launched the questionnaire concurrent with the Healing Together conference in February. And within just a few weeks, we had about 70 responses. And we read through, there's some questions that are targeted specifically on how have these depictions in film and television impacted you directly or indirectly? And the stories that are told are just so heartbreaking. You would really cannot believe how much people have been harmed directly by these films.
Yeah.
You know, and people in the ways they've been harmed, you know, they've been harmed because it's caused them to not accept their own diagnosis. You know, they're just like, I'm not a killer. It's caused them to not go seek help because of, you know, the shame around all of that. It's caused them to not get the help they need because when they go to the therapist expect them to come in wearing a different outfit every time they're a different part. And so, unfortunately, as you all know, there's not good education for therapists in graduate school. Well, guess what? Those therapists who haven't gotten education learn about DID from all these TV shows and films. And so they are influenced, even if it's subtly influenced, by what they have seen. And then they expect that in their therapy rooms. So it's really, really... You really don't understand until you start talking to more and more people about their experiences and the direct discrimination that's happened as a result. Too.
Or until you just watch the documentary.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you as a recent graduate student, I can't tell you how many times our assignments were to watch, pick a movie off this list then treat the person like they're your client.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I did watch a DID movie. We watched, what was it?
Frankie and Alex.
Frankie and Alex. Yeah.
That was a bad one.
Yeah. That's disheartening that you're, that's even the assignment, right? Because yeah, that's not helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I wasn't pleased with that, you know, and I made a video while I was, you know, at residency and I was like, you know, Hollywood movies are not like educational material.
No, they're not.
Unfortunately.
And that is why, you know, just the 15-minute Petals of a Rose has been so helpful. And people are starting to use that in graduate classes. And that is something that's kind of a later part of our plan and our mission of what to do to get it broadly into education, and we'll get there. But right now we're more focused on the current projects with the documentary and then the longer version of Petals of a Rose.
But really quick, before we move on to that, I would like to answer there is no best one other than I'm going to just go ahead and say Petals of a Rose. If you want to understand DID in a movie, it's 15 minutes, watch Petals of a Rose.
Yeah.
I don't say that about my content, but like, watch it. I've watched all these horrible DID movies, and I keep searching. I'm like, is there a good one? No. The answer is no. The worst ones, it's a tiebreaker between Split. I actually honestly don't think that portrayal of DID itself is the worst one, because we've seen people be a killer multiple times as DID. And honestly, you know, people with DID, I think any general audience member will figure this out. They don't turn into supernatural beings that can climb on walls. That's not humanly possible. So I think there's a little level of disbelief there. But the worst part about Split is the therapist, because
yes.
She sensationalizes that condition so much, breaks so many rules and boundaries and guidelines. And simultaneously, she is trying to validate the existence of DID in that movie. Mm-hmm. So the portrayal of DID in the movie, which is already bad, she is sensationalizing it to death. And then she's also trying to be like a savior and say, people, DID is a real condition. And that's like one of the things at the end of the movie, James McAvoy's character is like, oh, they're going to believe in me now. And it's like, oh my gosh.
And DID is a real condition, but not one where you turn into a monster and climb up the walls. So it's like she's validating that inaccurate representation.
And so
that does make it really bad.
It makes it really bad.
And it disturbs me because he kills his therapist.
He does kill his therapist. Like,
let's instill fear right into the people that are supposed to be helping us. Good job.
Yes, that's a really good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is the tiebreaker, though, is The Crowded Room. Honestly, that's the show that made me say I'm going to make this documentary, because when you have that's a more quote unquote realistic depiction, because it's grounded in reality. It's mm-hmm. There's not superheroes. It's mm-hmm. not like in the United States of Terror is pretty horrible in my opinion. I 1 out of 10. But that's still, it's like, hey, this is a 30-minute sitcom on Showtime. it's got a very small audience. It's a 30-minute sitcom. Of course, it's not gonna be the most accurate thing. But The Crowded Room, it's like, hey, we're gonna be serious now, and we're gonna be, you know, social advocacy with, hey, this is the first case of DID, you know, to go to. It's inspired by Billy Milligan. But when you it shows the inner world, and it shows, you know, his system has all these different people with different races and genders and sexualities. And it's like, that's good stuff. We really don't get to see it that much. Mm-hmm. But simultaneously, they are perpetuating those same old tropes of he's an attempted murderer. Mm-hmm. Almost all of his parts are violent, which is actually normally it's like, hey, you might have a single, you know, quote unquote bad guy alter who's like, oh, you're the dangerous one. No, like almost all of them are violent. Mm-hmm. And then they definitely go for the plot twist of, hey, all those of the hallucinations are all those people are you, even though the other parts are physically interacting with things in the background. And it's like, they can't, why is he closing the gate? He's literally not there. And they do it just for a plot twist and a gotcha. And it's just so frustrating because people really like that. They're like, oh, this is amazing. This is the most accurate portrayal of DID I've ever seen. And this is just users on IMDb. I'm like, I don't even think you know anything about DID. It's just so, when you have all that misinformation, mm-hmm. combined with even more factual information, it's even more damaging because you're mm-hmm. perpetuating these myths and mm-hmm. the stigma mm-hmm. that is not true. Mm-hmm. And you're taking, you know, time away from learning, hey, who his parts actually are. How did they come about to, you know, to help him? If he has this one part who's an escape artist, okay, what did he survive through? How did he become that escape artist that helped him in his life? But no, instead it's just like, ooh, gotcha, I have a cool magical ability. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to act all different around different people. And of course, you know, his system's aware of him. And one of them is like, hey, tell the Amanda Seyfried's character, you must not let him know about us because blah, 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 blah. And I'm like,
Yeah, there's issues with the
I just have so much hope because it's from Apple.
Right.
And, you know, they're like, they're think different. Yeah. And I was hoping so much that this would be the one to do it right, because the original log line was it's going to be an anthology series about hope, focusing on positive and hopeful stories about mental health. And then it's like, we're going to do the Billy Milligan story. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's not a positive story about mental health. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. It's frustrating. Mm. It's very frustrating.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you can tell.
I don't have words.
As you can tell, Dylan's very passionate about this. And he has done so much work in watching these horrible movies and analyzing. I have to talk him down. Like, he watches, and he's like, oh, my God, I just watched another one. You won't believe this one. I'm like, oh, I do believe it, because they're all the same way.
I got to give a fun little trivia thing. So the 1932 Academy Awards, the guy who won Best Actor was for Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. And the fun thing about this is that was actually a tie that year. So two actors won Best Actor. And I just think it's pretty ironic how, you know, hey, the guy who played two roles won, and then somebody else got an award. I'm like, interesting.
Oh my,
that's funny. Oh my goodness. Well, I know you've touched on some of your future projects a little bit, but could you go a little bit more in depth and tell us about all the things that you're working on?
So the documentary that we've been talking about, right now, it's kind of, we mentioned the April 12th training, and Dylan's working on kind of like the first version of it. And so that's like a 20-minute version of what ultimately we're envisioning as hopefully like a Netflix documentary where, you know, we are going to show the history of the misrepresentation in the film. We're going to show the impact it's had on people. We're going to have, you know, therapists, clinicians who can tell the real truth about what the condition is. We're going to hear from the people who have been impacted negatively, and we're going to establish the hope for the future of this is what you need to do to tell the stories of people with DID, because people with DID, they are amazing mm-hmm. people out there that have incredibly powerful stories to be told. And they're not all about being disordered, struggling people. You know, they are professionals and they're living their lives, and they've been able to overcome their traumas. And not everyone is there, but you can get there. And those are the stories we need, because people need role models of hope and healing. And that's the future. And that's ultimately what Dylan's planning to do with the longer version of Petals of a Rose. You want to talk about that?
Yes, the longer version of Petals of a Rose. I don't know if that's going to be a movie or miniseries or a full-on series, but I mean, it's basically, we're going to take the short film and share how Rose gets diagnosed. So everything that happens before the short film, then we're going to remake the short film, mm-hmm. and then we're going to show what happens after the short film. And I'm hoping mm-hmm. to get involved as many stories as possible. So mm-hmm. it probably would need to be a it probably just need to be an actual TV series, mm-hmm. sort of like Orange is the New Black, mm-hmm. where we have Piper, who would be Rose, the protagonist who we're following, but then we get to meet all these other people with DID and learn their stories along the way, because we can't just have Rose be the only representation of mm-hmm. person with DID. I mean, there's so many. If you've met a system, you've met a system. Right. And again, 120 exactly. million people have DID. That's not even including OSDD. That's just DID.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So it's not rare, as people think. It's not at all. Rare. It's 1.5% of the population. That's 120 million people. Not rare.
Twice the rate of schizophrenia, more than OCD, more than bipolar 1, more than bipolar 2, even. Like, we got to stop saying it's rare. It's still on a lot of websites. Yeah. This is a rare right. condition. Like, well, you don't say that about any of the other ones right. that have lower prevalence rate. It's like, why? Bizarre. Yeah.
So, yeah, we definitely want to show the diversity of experiences. We also, you know, want to show how did she get to that point where she was able that evening to be communicating with her parts. And obviously she's not done. She has more work to do. So how can she get to a point where she can have a healthy, intimate relationship with Jeremy? And what does that look like, you know, to provide further hope on that healing journey?
Love
so
it.
We've
love
done
it,
some work on that one. We started out in the fall doing a bunch of interviews with different systems to get their experiences. And we've interviewed people from around the world on that, mm-hmm. From, you know, France and Australia and
And then the focus is switched over to the documentary.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the exact... I think I just started getting interested in that a little more. And I'm like, hey, we would probably need this documentary to work, be like sort of a pitch for the show or the movie or whatever it is to show the importance of this thing. Because people, when they just watch Petals of a Rose and they don't know anything about DID, they're like, okay, I've learned something, but I don't see... You know, people who don't know how important this film is are just like, okay, that's a movie, I guess.
Yeah, we need the documentary to educate the Hollywood executives to ultimately give funding for the longer Petals of Rose story.
I mean,
right,
they learn there's 120 million people out there who are like don't have any representation. I would think that would be an obvious like, yes, go invest there. People want representation. They want this film. It's like, okay, yeah.
So we need to tell that story first, and then so Dylan's still we're still doing work on and off on the longer version, but really the focus is the documentary right now.
Yeah.
Okay. In the interest of time, could we do the...
Okay, all right. Okay. So you read that one. Mm-hmm.
We know you just recently got back from the ISSTD conference where you received an award. Would you be willing to tell us about the award and your experience at the ISSTD conference?
Yes, we would. That was really exciting. You know, our... Before we went to ISSTD, our antenna were up. And I'm not talking about the antenna on the snail that anyone who follows us on social media, Susie was talking about the antenna on the snail. But our
which are eyeballs.
Which
actually.
Are actually eyeballs. Yeah, they don't actually listen to you, but Susie doesn't know that because she's 4. But our antenna were up because, you know, there's been so much controversy around the things that have happened with ISSTD and McLean and lived experience and blah, 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 and all the things. So we weren't quite sure how things were going to go, but we had an amazing experience at ISSTD conference. I mean, incredible experience. Do you want to talk a little bit about all the positive things that happened?
I mean, it was everybody was thrilled. They were like, oh, if they knew of the film already, they're like, oh, you're Dylan. And
they love Dylan.
And I don't think that they were, you know, hypnotized into saying that.
Awesome.
It was very genuine. And it's a wonderful experience. There were so many knowledgeable people there. And it was just really awesome being in a room with all these clinicians. Mm-hmm. And it seems that they're making steps in like a good direction, it seems. I obviously am young and not part of the ISSTD, and I don't know their full history, but there's been, you know, controversy, but it seems whatever is going on, they're trying to make up for it or do better.
It was really, I mean, we felt, as someone with lived experience of dissociative identities, it was a very, you know, I was very much supported and accepted and valued at this conference.
Yes.
As someone who was presenting and screening our film, which had standing room only for the screening. And, you know, we received the award that we received was for the media award / audio visual. And I haven't fact checked this, but I have to believe that Dylan is the youngest person who's ever received an award from the ISSTD. And for anyone listening who doesn't know, the ISSTD is the International Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation. And, the conference we went to is their annual conference where various clinicians are presenting their research and different, you know, sessions on different therapeutic processes, et cetera. And, you know, we did our film screening and we got this award. They give a wide range of awards, but most people getting the awards, you know, they are PhDs and they've been doing research for years and years. And most of them are probably in their 40s and 50s and 60s. So I think that was quite an honor for Dylan to get the award and for our film to be recognized. And there were a lot of people there who had not seen the award, had not seen the film. So it's a great opportunity as well. But there were many people who've shared with us, like, we've been using this film with our clients. It's been so meaningful to us. And that's why Dylan really was like a rock star at this event, because people just, you know, were discovering that he was the one behind this film. It was really pretty special. Nice. We did have one negative incident that actually turned into be, I think, a really positive experience. Yeah. So there was a presentation that happened where a psychiatrist was making a presentation of a film he had made, and he was asking the audience for their feedback because his film is still under construction. And it's about an hour-long film. And we were there, and we watched the film, and we had quite a few things to say about the film. But we... I shouldn't say we had quite a few things to say. We had quite a few things we thought about the film, but at the end of it, we decided, look, there's one element of this thing that we just have to voice, because we really had a problem with how in this film, it was a story of a woman's recovery from trauma and her healing. And ultimately it was a focus on her integration into a single self. And we did not like how the condition of dissociative identity disorder was completely pathologized in this story. And there was no focus on this is a survival mechanism. These parts are created to help and support. The focus was on how do we get them to integrate into one. And
it's also very much a savior film.
Yeah. And so the part that I, at the end of it, I stood up and I shared, I'm a person living with dissociative identities. My concern about the film, which, by the way, feedback was specifically asked. There was even a feedback form with 10 questions on it. And one of them was, what would you do to improve the film or change it, make it better? So I said what I just said about all the pathologizing, and that I would like to see more focus on the survival mechanism, the strength that this survivor had to get through this and to heal from her traumas, and that the condition is why she was alive. And so this psychiatrist did not receive my feedback well. And there was some back and forth, and it ended with him saying, I am the psychiatrist here. Okay. Which was like, did he really just say that? Yes, he really did say that. And there was an uproar after the session about how he had treated us. And the level of support that we received because of how he treated us was unbelievable.
Oh, because you were, also, did you share you're the only one who came out having lived experience in that Q&A?
Yeah, in that Q&A, I was the only person that disclosed that I had lived experience. He received everyone else's feedback just fine. So people were flocking to me afterwards, apologizing for his behavior, telling me that was not right. Another person who had someone else went and reported it to the board. I spoke to people on the board about what happened to me. They were appalled. And they said, we have a code of conduct here at the ISSTD, and they encouraged me to file a complaint, which I did, and they are investigating the situation. So I haven't shared any of that on our social media yet, but I think it's a good thing for people to know that I was very supported. You know, this is one person at the conference. That's not the ISSTD. This is this person. And you know, for whatever reason, they weren't open to my feedback and they insulted and invalidated us. But the repair came from all of the support that I got and for how the board members who I spoke with at ISSTD, you know, supported me and said this was not acceptable.
And we hadn't won the award yet. So it's not like people were like, oh, my gosh, you said that to her.
Oh, yeah. 30 minutes after that, we go and get our award. So it was just like...
So he will know to listen to you because you got the award.
So that was, like I said, it was a negative, but honestly, I'm glad it happened because it was kind of like a nice little test of, well, what happens in the situation like
Which is why I think I'm like, hey, I think they're moving in a good direction. If they were appalled and people, plenty of people there in the audience were like, oh my gosh. And, you know, the amount of support she received from the people there on the board.
It was very affirming. Yeah. We had such a great experience all the way around. We made so many new connections. We met a researcher out of Boston University who researches stigma. She focuses on stigma primarily on identity. But we talked to her about, hey, you know, what do you think about doing some research on stigma for dissociative disorders? And she was interested. And we're going to have further conversations. So it was just a great experience and lots of connections that will be helpful for the future work that we're doing as well.
That just like warms my heart to know that they just jumped right to help you, to jump in and do what was right. I love hearing that, you know, the good that comes out of things. So that was a wonderful, thank you for sharing all of that. I appreciate that.
Thank you for speaking up.
Good on you. And, you know, and I also say we really appreciated the plenary session that Emma Christensen did. It's available, she actually recorded a practice session of it that's available on her System Speak podcast. And it's called Dignity and Dissociation, Dignity and Treatment. And it's a beautiful discussion of all of that theme of dignity for plurality in a wider form than just DID. And I really appreciated what she did with that plenary and recommend people check that out.
Awesome. We should definitely listen to that. So thanks for sharing. Appreciate that. Okay. So let's go ahead and we're gonna switch a couple of questions around just because of time that we have here. So, all right. So where can people find you to follow you both and all your future projects?
Well, we're on Facebook and Instagram as Petals_of_a_Rose_the_movie.
Yeah, I don't post really much on my personal Instagram. I need to. Like, I haven't even made a post about, like, getting an award. So, I mean, but you can still message me there. It's just Dylan Crumpler. But Petals_of_a_Rose_the_movie is our Instagram. And whatever messages we get there, we'll get.
And you can write to us on our website on dylancrumpler.com. I don't know if y'all are going to put any show notes out or anything.
Absolutely.
So all the links will be there. Yes. And in our link tree. That's on our Instagram account. We post all of our like podcast interviews and trainings that we're doing. So, and social media is the best way, but I know not everyone's on social media. We don't have like a newsletter, but if you ever want to communicate with us, you can write to us on the website if you're not on social media.
Yeah. That's just also just dylancrumpler.com. Our link tree though, I need to update the website very soon. It still says I live in California. I've updated the website since then. I just never updated the bio.
Anyway, well, so much has been going on.
Lot's been going on. I mean, yeah, the Hollywood strikes. I'm like, am I going to go back there? But no, it's gas is $6 a gallon. No.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no way. Man.
Yeah, we'll make sure to have all these things in the show notes, too.
Okay. For everybody. So, real quick.
What's a takeaway or two that you would like to leave with our listeners today?
I would just like to say to have hope. For wherever you are in your journey of healing from trauma or living with dissociation, that to have hope for your future and for, you know, to ignore all these horrible movies and the lack of role models that are out there, that, you know, you do not need to be held back by any of these things. And it can feel impossible at times because I've been there. But just to have hope for your future. And there's so many good things that are happening right now around understanding DID better and educating therapists and podcasts like this and Healing My Parts and Adrian Fletcher's Trailblazing the Way and the, you know, the Infinite Mind Healing, Healing Together Conference. There's just so many opportunities. So I would say find some support and community. I think you guys are launching an online community, but there's so much support and hope. And I just want people to know that if you feel like you're struggling with your history of trauma and dissociation.
And we are also in trying to, you know, share the stories of DID through Petals of a Rose. If you want to try and connect with us via our website, again, we're trying to get as many voices as possible involved for the longer version of the film. Because again, it's most likely going to be a mini series, if not a full on series. And we want to show the diversity of stories. So if you're like, hey, Hollywood, stop depicting DID like that. Here's my story. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, you can write into us.
And fill out our lived experience questionnaire.
Yeah, the lived experience questionnaire has a lot of that, which you can find in our link tree.
Right.
Which you can easily, even if you don't have an Instagram, I'm pretty sure you can still Google Petals of a Rose, the movie Instagram, and then click the links there.
It comes right up if you type in Petals of a Rose.
And what we're going to get that lived experience questionnaire on the website soon.
Very soon. I'm just busy with the documentary.
We got a summer website overhaul coming.
Yeah.
Yay,
so exciting. Wow, it's been such an honor talking to you both today. We are so excited for your future plans and want to thank you so much for all that you're doing for the DID community to help spread awareness and for taking the time to talk with us and the peeps out there in the big wide world today.
Yes, thank you. We are honored to have you as guests here and we can't wait to see the completion of all your projects. So it feels good to know that we have so many in our community that are trailblazing the way. You both are making a difference with all that you do.
Thank you so much. We appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you for hanging out with a trio of multiples and one top-notch supporter.
Yay.
From your hosts, Drew
and Garden System, thank you for listening to A Couple of Multiples, The Reality of Dissociative Identity Disorder.
This podcast is intended for educational purposes and is not a replacement for therapy.
Listening to this podcast does not constitute a therapeutic relationship with the hosts or any potential guest speakers.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review. We would love to hear what you enjoyed the most.
You can visit our website at acoupleofmultiples.com for additional information and resources, and to also subscribe to our mailing list to receive future updates.
Remember, you matter and are loved for being all of yous.